You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Rec, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio on 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. Well, a big announcement yesterday in Wisconsin. Majority leader of the Republican-dominated legislature, gerrymandered illegitimate legislature. He would not have been majority leader if there were fair maps. A fellow named Jim Stanky from Kakona. Jim Stanky from Kakona had originally said that this was going to be his last term. He was going to step down after the elections in November. He was not running for re-election. Now he has pulled the plug. He says, in fact, he's resigning from the assembly, resigning from his majority leader position on July 27, a couple of weeks away. He's not just retiring, he's resigning. And not only that, just reading the statement he put out, he doesn't have anything else lined up. He's saying he wants other opportunities. Okay, well, good luck. You get some other opportunities. What's really going on here in the Republican Party? Jim Stanky had been a conservative Republican. He'd gone through all the baloney of Voss, Gableman, Trump, all of it. My read of this is that at some point he couldn't swallow it anymore. I'm not saying he developed a conscience. Maybe he did. Maybe he was disgusted by the Republican Party. There's no indication of that in his public statement. But, you know, there was a Republican congressman up in Gallagher's district, the Green Bay area, who just pulled the plug after a couple of terms the minute Trump got in. What's happening is that a number of Republicans in minor leadership positions are pulling the plug. They're disgusted. You know, they watch Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony like everyone else. They read the paper, follow the news. They know the damage that the Trump cult in the Republican Party is causing. So in the short run, does this make any difference? No, they'll elect somebody else. Somebody else who come leaping and screaming out of the assembly caucus wants to be majority leader. Go along with the Trump cult, go along with damaging the state, trying to undermine our democratic institutions. Probably somebody who will say that the legislature should pick the presidential electors and that the presidential election is a beauty contest. Somebody probably who will say, yeah, I don't think you should vote for state treasurer, secretary of state, head of the Department of Public Instruction. None of that. Somebody will say that they should be appointed by the governor. Somebody will say, yeah, I think we should get rid of drop boxes. I think we should make it very difficult and threatening for people in large cities like Milwaukee and Madison and elsewhere. Very inconvenient to vote. Yeah, I think we should do all of that so we can better serve our donors. There will be somebody like that, a hack. Somebody out of the dark money, black ops, android, Stepford wife culture in the Republican Party. But this is not a tip of the hat to Jim Stanky. He just decided to get out. I think he got out because he was disgusted with his party. There's some glimmer of recognition that his party had gone off the rails, was betraying the United States, but I'll leave it to him to say that. It's just very rare that a guy has had that long a tenure in the assembly, and went to majority leader. And frankly, if Voss gets eased out, and that's the amazing thing about this, I would ease him out with fair maps. He wouldn't get reelected with fair maps. But he's being attacked, Voss is, by the right as a rhino because Trump called him a rhino. And why is that? He genuflected to Trump. He hired Gableman at over $1 million so far with no cap and no end in sight to investigate something that isn't there. They've already concluded that there was no rigging. And now the money is being spent defending Gableman. This is our tax dollars, by the way, my tax dollars and your tax dollars, for ethics violations and sanctions by judges for misconduct. One of them is he makes an off-color remark about a judge, and a female opposing counsel. Why am I paying for that defense? Voss is paying for that defense with our tax dollars. That's not enough for Trump. Trump says he's a rhino. So the right wing in that party, and there are people to the right of Voss, could throw him out, and Jim Stanky would probably have been the speaker. But he doesn't want any of that. I think the stench may have gotten too great, and he had very considerably experienced nostrils to inhale stench over a long time in the assembly. But he's stepping down. He's stepping down without a job, vamoosing. He says, I'm out of here. And, you know, he's not the only one. Paul Ryan, and here's a guy, I think, who's gone up in my estimation. You know, when Paul Ryan was speaker, John Boehner had been speaker before him. Paul Ryan had been an intern in John Boehner's office, by the way. Paul Ryan went to a college in Ohio called Miami of Ohio. It's a good college. And John Boehner, of course, was a congressman from Ohio. And when Paul Ryan got elected speaker after Boehner stepped down, Boehner exulted, and they both turned out to be fairly moderate, frankly, by current standards. Boehner, for instance, and this leads up to what Paul Ryan has said about Trump. Boehner, when he had the right-wing caucus, the Freedom Caucus, and the Republican caucus stymie him and hurt the United States, he would put together as many Republican votes as possible, and he'd go to Nancy Pelosi. He'd say, I need, you know, 22 Democratic votes to get this through. This is bipartisan. She'd give them to him. She would say to her caucus, give me 22 votes from the strongest incumbents that can't be beaten in primaries in our party. And here's an example. Remember when Hurricane Sandy hit in the New Jersey, New York area, caused devastation? The right-wing Republicans from Texas and elsewhere blocked any aid because it went to New York and New Jersey, blue states. I'm not kidding. When Texas gets hit, or Louisiana gets hit, or Florida gets hit, everybody in Congress votes aid. But this Freedom Caucus would not vote aid because it was New York and New Jersey. But Boehner did. He put together a lot of Republican votes. He had Nancy Pelosi give him some Democratic votes, and he got the aid through. The Freedom Caucus then went after his scalp. They said, we are not putting up with this kind of thing, and they squeezed him out, and Paul Ryan got in. Now, Paul Ryan got in, and remember, he was running for re-election and a couple of years ago, and everybody jumped on him, and, you know, he's no good and all that, and he finally dropped out of the race, and this fellow Stile got in. Stile is bad news. But Paul Ryan was actually a statesman, and I think a lot of people didn't see that at the time. I'll give you an example. He stood up to Trump early and hard. And here's the dialogue that's gone on. In a new book by Mark Leibovich coming out, he's a staff writer for the Atlantic. Apparently, it's a darn good book. In this particular book, he quotes a lot of people who talked to him, probably not realizing they were going to be quoted. And in it, he has Paul Ryan saying, quote, it's amazing how one guy, Donald Trump, one guy could Luca Brasi you. Luca Brasi was the enforcer and the godfather, a really vicious guy. He also said Trump's control of the GOP is like a mass sociology experiment. He couldn't understand how it happened. He said, when he looked at the video of the January 6th insurrection, he sobbed. Now, this is Mark Leibovich. Who knows what he did? But Paul Ryan, ever since he was in college, was in that Capitol as an intern to Boehner. Then he ran for Congress himself in Janesville. His family owns a business down there, well-regarded. He's married, believe it or not, to a woman from a very prominent Democratic family from Oklahoma, Boren. And then he goes to Congress, and he's young. He was in that Capitol all his life, and he said, a lot of those Capitol police officers were being beaten up. I knew it. They were friends of mine. A lot of those congressmen who were hiding and were being attacked, I knew. And he said, it's amazing how Trump, one guy, can Luca Brasi you, be a thug out of the mafia. That's what he said. So Trump comes back, of course, shoots his mouth off and goes, quote, Ryan is a curse on the GOP, end quote. Ryan is a curse on the GOP. Well, he has that backwards. Trump is a curse on the GOP. It's a cult of Trump. And you have Paul Ryan coming out and saying it, albeit in a book quoted by someone else, but he doesn't deny it. And knowing Paul Ryan, I met Paul Ryan, decent guy, obviously a conservative Republican, but there comes a time, the most recent historical example was in Germany in the 30s and 40s, where it didn't matter if you were Democrat, strike that, because they didn't have that, but conservative or liberal, didn't matter. What mattered was your character. There were plenty of conservatives back then who stood up to Hitler and were killed, and plenty of liberals, but there were also plenty of liberals who knuckled under to Hitler, as well as conservatives. And you're seeing that right now. So Paul Ryan, I think, is a principled conservative who's standing up, and frankly, I'd rather see him running for the Republican nomination for governor than the clowns they have right now. But that's a different story. The point is we've got to reelect the Democrat and keep the veto power in there. But Jim Stanky is toast, riding into the sunset in Kokona without a job. Had enough. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. The Direct, our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to go to Ukraine, actually to Russia. And, you know, in the all of the debate over that war, I think you need a much deeper historical context on the savagery of Russia, of the people, of their leadership, the savagery that goes back over 1,000 years. And I'm going to tell you this. When Stalin, after Lenin died, Stalin became the dictator in Russia. Between the 1920s and 50s, he set up forced labor camps and sent 18 million people there. They were in prison, 18 million people. About 2 million of them died. These were dissidents. These were persecuted ethnic groups, enemies of Stalin. Whoever he wanted to, he just picked them up. And when you get a dictatorship like that, he has plenty of willing stooges, law enforcement people, to do it because they get to act out their own sadistic little game plan and they're afraid that they will be retaliated themselves. 2 million of them were sent to Siberia and Kazakhstan, part of Kazakhstan. But in particular, 6,000 were sent to an island in the middle of the Ob River in Kazakhstan. It's called Nazinri. Or Zazino, and the odd coincidence is that the first four letters are N-A-Z-I. The fact of the matter is that the Russians are of the Nazi ideology themselves, and they always have been. This island's in the middle of the Ob River. It's called Cannibal Island, or the Island of Death. And believe this or not, Stalin wanted an experiment. that I don't even, I mean, it's something that Hitler would have done. He decided to put 6,000 people there with no food, no tools, just some flour they're supposed to mix with river water, gave dysentery, and then see if they could survive on an island. I have no idea what kind of animals were on it. You know, no fishing lines to fish with. What happened is they engaged in cannibalism. They would grab the weaker of them, tie them to a tree. There were stories of they'd cut off their calves, their breasts, and eat them, fry them. This was suppressed until the late 80s under Gorbachev. When Gorbachev came in, he instituted glasnost, Russian term meaning openness or transparency. And this all came out. And the Russian people said, well, you know, that was Stalin. We're not Stalin anymore. Well, let me tell you something. There's a Ukrainian teenager named Vlad Buryak. He was kidnapped in Mariupol when the Russians went in. The Russians, as you know, tortured people and killed them on the way out. There were corpses found with their hands tied behind their backs, evidence of physical abuse. Vlad Buryak said, when he finally was managed to escape, that one of his jobs, he had to clean the torture room. People were hanged up by their thumbs, that kind of thing, and blood on the floor. The Russians are savages. They have been savages since the 10th century. That must be understood. You look at a Russian and you think he looks like a European. Yeah, he does look like a European until he gets any power over anybody. Now, some people have said, look, Matt, the Russian people are good. The Russian people are as good as any other people. I met a lot of them in Moscow and St. Petersburg in 1997 during the glasnost thaw when Gorbachev was in charge. Well, I should say Yeltsin was in charge. Gorbachev put him in originally. But their culture is a savage culture. Let me put it that way. And their leaders are savages. And I mean that in the true sense of the word. Their leaders are no different from Genghis Khan and the Mongols who swept out of Asia into Europe. They almost got into Vienna in the 13th century till the Khan died and they all retreated. Now, if you go to Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, you say it's a primitive society. I mean, children in Ulaanbaatar, apparently I've never been there, but I have friends who are there. Well, they'll be standing around in a group, and if they have to relieve themselves, they just pull up their robes and do it right while they're standing there. In your presence, that's considered normal. But back in the 13th century, it was a formidable fighting force because they knew how to ride horses. Although they had no culture, they spread nothing of value over several centuries. Russia's the same way. So when they say, when Vladimir Putin says, well, I want to now take Poland back, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, all part of the Soviet, quote, empire. His party, the one that backs him the strongest, is proposing changing the name of his title from the word president to an old Russian term for a warlord who controls the whole country going back many centuries. This is a sick society. You must understand that. You must understand that. They are committing war crimes. They are committing genocide. They look on it as business as usual. And what's the reason for this? The reason for this is that they have no history of private ownership of private property, among other things. For 1,000 years, to the Russian Revolution in 1917, some of them could be owned by other people as serfs. It wasn't quite slaves, I agree. But they were serfs. They couldn't go anywhere. They could be brutally beaten at will, and they could be forced to work for 1,000 years. 1,000 years. Then communism came along, and Stalin murdered 20 million people. He imprisoned 18 million, killed 2 million in the camps alone. He's the one who said it doesn't matter who the people vote for. What matters is who counts the votes. That is the Russian culture. Nobody who's ever been exposed to it wants to see it again. Nobody's ever been exposed to it, wants to see it again. Now, Iran, another major troublemaker in the world, is going to send them several hundred drones, some of them armed. They're also on the way to making a bomb, a jihadist bomb is what it is. They have threatened Europe and they have threatened Israel. Anybody who doesn't subscribe to their religion. At some point, the West has got to say two things. And they don't have to say it out loud in diplomatic meetings, but the Russian is a savage. Their cultures are savages. And we will stop them at any cost from penetrating Europe. And number two, Iran are savages, and we will not permit them to bomb anybody or develop a jihadist bomb. Now they are teaming up with Russia to send them drones. We need a firm foreign policy against both of them. Going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. I'll tell you what. We had talked before, and by the way, the January 6th panel is going to convene again today at 9 o'clock Central Time, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, for another hearing, another broadcast. By the way, the one on Thursday has been postponed, has been rescheduled, because they say they got additional information. My suspicion is they got additional information from Cipollone, Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel, and they're digesting it. So there's only one hearing this week, just today. If you have time, you may want to look at it. It's going to be very important in my view. There is a tie-in between the Trump people and the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. It's going to be highlighted, and there's going to be some testimony from the video deposition of Pat Cipollone. But I want to revisit why Cassidy Hutchinson was rushed into testimony when it looked like they were going to take a recess for the July 4th recess. That's supposedly dead time in the summer where all the congressmen go home and they all they campaign and that kind of thing, and they hang around picnics and they try to get themselves reelected. Suddenly, though, the panel hastily convened a hearing, and Cassidy Hutchinson was the star witness, and it may be that her testimony will be as significant as Alexander Butterfield's was, what, 50 years ago? Almost 50 years ago in the Watergate hearing. He's the guy, Deputy Chief of Staff, who for the first time revealed that there were tape recordings of the telephone calls and the meetings in the White House. And when people heard in Nixon's own voice what he was up to, that's when he was forced to step down. Well, in this one, it's not tape recordings, but it doesn't have to be. Trump says his stuff right on TV, right on video. But Cassidy Hutchinson is the one who testified that the Secret Service was keeping people away from him because when they went through metal detectors, they had AR-15s, brass knuckles, knives. A couple of them had homemade napalm. Gasoline stuffed with stuff that could have exploded as napalm, homemade explosives, spears, poles with tips on them, that kind of thing. And Trump said, well, what about all those people over on the Washington Monument lawn? They said, well, they won't go through a metal detector and they've got to keep them away. He said, no, get rid of the metal detectors. They're not here to hurt me. Then we're going to march up to the Capitol. What were those weapons? If they're not there to hurt him, who are they there to hurt? They were there to hurt Capitol police officers guarding congressmen so they could get to the congressmen themselves. But the thing that alarmed Liz Cheney and Benny Thompson and the rest were threatening calls that Cassidy Hutchinson got. The one that is particularly anonymous, it goes like this, an anonymous call, quote, A person let me know you have your deposition tomorrow. He wants me to let you know he's thinking about you. He knows you're loyal and you're going to do the right thing when you go in for your deposition tomorrow. Mike, this is the kind of thing the mafia does. Michael Cohen, remember, he was the lawyer for Trump that went to prison. He actually went to prison. He went to the slammer, among other things, for his role in the Stormy Daniels settlement. And in that indictment, or criminal charge against Michael Cohen, there's reference to unindicted co-conspirator one, which is Donald Trump. Donald Trump had the relationship with Stormy Daniels. Michael Cohen never met Stormy Daniels, but Michael Cohen went to jail and Trump did not. And that was the least of Trump's offenses. He said he got the same call. He got the same call. And in a lot of these calls, they also put, quote, remember that he reads transcripts. Remember that he reads transcripts. Where is Cassidy Hutchinson now? She's unemployed, and she's sequestered with her family and a security detail at public expense. Sequestered means that you are holed up somewhere, typically in an unknown location. It's a witness protection program so that you can't be killed. We're talking here about a woman who worked in the White House and is giving truthful testimony about Donald Trump. She's not giving testimony about organized crime, about the mafia, about a drug cartel. How have we gotten to the point? How have we gotten to the point where she has to fear for her life? She has to be sequestered. She's unemployed. She can't show up to work somewhere for fear of being killed. She's sequestered with her family and a security detail. Why should she need a security detail? Why should Dr. Fauci need a security detail? Why should these people need security details at public expense? Because there is a cult of Trump that is threatening murder. And you know, I'm very tired at the lack of prosecution. You can't tell me the CIA can't trace that call, okay? I don't believe that. If it came from Russia, they could trace the call. So if it came from Hoboken, New Jersey, they should be able to trace the call. Some people say, well, there's always a First Amendment. Yeah, there's a First Amendment. Let them say to a jury that they have a First Amendment right to threaten a witness. That's baloney. But a lot of them will say, well, it's very, very oblique statements. Well, we know you're having your deposition. He wants me to let you know he thinks you're loyal. He reads transcripts. They want to say, well, that's nothing wrong with that. Well, there's plenty wrong with that. Go to the lines. Pete of Loyal, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today, Pete?
Yeah, I'm on the way to Loyal for Farm Technology Day, also from Milwaukee. Calling to see whether you wanted to talk about whether the way WPMJ4 is running that candidate debate is actually a corporate contribution to five of the people running for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate. I'm one of the guys running. I'm not going to be on the debate stage. My name is Peter Prakarski.
Okay, yeah, well, here's the thing. We're talking about Cassidy Hutchinson, but I'm happy to have you call in. Peter, you're a candidate for U.S. Senate. So everybody knows, the election is 4 weeks from today, by the way, guys. 4 weeks from today, August 9, is a primary. We have a candidate for the U.S. Senate on the phone, Peter Prakarski. So go ahead. You have your innings. Have your say, Peter. But then I'm going to get back to Cassidy Hutchinson and the January 6 panel. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running and what your concern is about the debate.
Yeah, I'm running because this is what I can do for our country. The concern about the debate is because they set up, it looks like the only statewide televised debate. They set up some standards, one of which is you got to show significant support throughout the state of Wisconsin, which you can demonstrate by getting 5,000 contributions. According to them, if 5,000 people living in Hawaii contribute a buck apiece, you got 5,000 contributions. That's significant statewide support. Other way is 5% on the Marquette poll. To get 5% on the Marquette poll, the sample size is like 360. That's 18 people, given the way they had a sample. That means if 18 people in the city of Milwaukee say they want to vote for somebody, and nobody in the other 71 counties says that, then according to the political editor down at WTMJ, you've got significant statewide support throughout the state of Wisconsin, and you're on the debate stage for an hour. The cost of that airtime is about $600,000 if you just go and buy it in non-preemptible 30s. So it's, and they're a corporation. They're using stuff, property that belongs to UMAT, the airwaves. So they got to have a license to use the public airwaves to broadcast that. It belonged not only to you, but to all 330 million people in this country. So those are some of the concerns I could go in. Oh, yeah, there's a journalistic set of journalistic ethics guidelines on the website of the WTMJ4. It says they're going to be honest, they're going to be impartial in political matters. And there's some real serious questions as to whether they're following their own guidelines. On top of that, the president of the corporation has to told the Securities and Exchange Commission he's got to sign a form every year saying he's operating in a code with their corporate business code, which requires honesty in business. And there's a real question whether this is an honest way to do it. If he doesn't sign the form saying he's running an honest business, he might not get the $7.3 million he's supposed to get.
Peter, I want to thank you for calling in. I want to just say to everybody that we're hearing now from Peter Pekarsky, who's one of the candidates. He has his signatures. He's on the ballot. You'll see his name on the ballot on August 9. Whatever you do, get out and vote. There is a primary for U.S. Senate. And 4 weeks from today, and there are a number of, I think there are eight candidates for the Senate on. Peter Pekarsky is one of them. But also there's a contest for lieutenant governor, for secretary of state, for treasurer. Very important elections on the Democratic side. Be sure to get out and vote. Be sure to get out. Peter, thanks very much for calling in. I want to get back before the end of the segment to Cassidy Hutchinson and the January 6th hearing. These threatening mafia-like calls are coming in, and they're not being prosecuted. And because prosecutors are going, oh, well, they're ambiguous. There's nothing ambiguous to saying, quote, a person let me know you have your deposition tomorrow. He wants me to let you know he's thinking about you. He knows you're loyal and you're going to do the right thing when you go in for your deposition. The right thing is speaking the truth. That's the only right thing. And then sometimes they go on and say he reads transcripts. That is a threat. Prosecute these people. For Pete's sake, prosecute these people. And when you're in front of a jury, if their lawyer wants to get up and say, oh, he was just being nice to her. He's being nice to her. He just wanted to know that he was thinking of her and that he just wanted to tell her to do the right thing, which is tell the truth. Really, she's sequestered with her family. She's sequestered with her family and a security detail, unemployed. She's in a witness protection program. Nobody in their right mind looks at that phone call and says it was benign. It was not benign, it was a mafia call. And how we came to a point where the cult of Trump is intimidating witnesses in front of the January 6th committee, that's a congressional committee. If they do it in front of grand juries, and Michael Cohen did give testimony to prosecutors, if they do that in the Fulton County, that's Atlanta, grand jury investigating the extortion of Brad Raffensperger, that's got to be prosecuted too. I mean, at some point, if you're not going to prosecute witness intimidation and tampering in front of a congressional committee and in front of a grand jury that's investigating a felony, if you're not going to investigate that, you're contributing to the erosion of the rule of law in this country. The one thing that you have got to have is a fair criminal process. It's fair to the defense, fair to the prosecution, and fair to the public. You have got to have that. And right now, we do not have that completely, because right now, what's happening is that witnesses are being intimidated. How long is she going to have to be in the witness protection program? Cassidy Hutchinson. Michael Cohen said that he was so frightened that when he agreed to testify to Congress and got these phone calls saying, we know you'll do the right thing, hint, hint, instead of flying to D.C. from New York, there's a shuttle, which is what you normally do. Instead of flying from Washington, D.C. to New York, he drove and he semi-disguised himself. He wore sunglasses, which he never did, and a baseball hat, and he was careful where he stopped. How is this possible? I mean, at one time in the 1950s, there was an investigation of organized crime, and there is an investigation of the attempt by organized crime to penetrate labor unions, which was unsuccessful. Labor unions are very honest, and they stood up to it, but they didn't deserve to be threatened. The longshoremen didn't deserve to be threatened. But that was the 1950s, and that was organized crime. I mean, this is Trump. This is the Luca Brasi, as described by Paul Ryan, of our present culture. We're coming to a break, and I'll tell you what, there's a lot more ahead of us, a lot more back after the break.
The greatest radio show ever could be your greatest advertising investment ever. Partner with the Devil's Advocates and activate our loyal, educated, and engaged audience today. In-show interviews and sponsored special events considered across Wisconsin. Affordable digital and terrestrial ads available in Chicago and Minneapolis and directly on the Devil Radio app. Make a deal with the Devils and get the Devil's Advocates bump to your bottom line. Call or text 844-967-2789 today.
Back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, this would be an amusing exchange if Trump weren't about to announce for president again. Trump gave a speech up in Alaska the other day in which he referred to Elon Musk as a BS artist, except he said the whole word, the B and the S word. Right from the microphone, right out of the blue, Elon Musk is not running in Alaska. Elon Musk is not running in Alaska. Has nothing to do with the election. And Trump, basically to try to get headlines, comes out and just likes to insult who's ever in the news so he gets a headline himself. Elon Musk came back and said, Elon Musk has a mouth on him too, and is not shy about talking. And he said, there's too much drama with Trump. There should be a maximum age for the presidency, and i.e. Trump wouldn't make it. And it's time for Trump to sail into the sunset. Trump may have met his match. Elon Musk has an ego as big as Trump. Elon Musk is a lot more capable than Trump, and he has nothing to lose. No one's voting for Elon Musk. So I think calling Elon Musk a BS artist, as Trump did from the microphone in Alaska, invites that kind of retaliation. See where that goes. We're going to the lines. Wisco Paul, my friend. Thanks for watching my day, Wisco Paul.
Hey, good morning, Matt. I just a few things here on the J6. You know, you have three Supreme Court justices in this state that voted to overturn the election. Lawrence and Galen are investigating the election, and they still are. Also, we have a senator named Johnson. He's called Rojo. You can't tell me he didn't know what was going on here. I think he may be implicated in this whole thing. But you can't. Trump is the kind of a guy that you can't trust. You can't deal with. He lies and lies. But Johnson put his trust in him. And the other character in this, besides many congressmen that were involved in this, is Lindsey Graham. When you make a phone call to Georgia, I forget the Rosenberg, I hope I didn't butcher his name, and want the vote overturned, that should be enough right there for a felony, isn't it? And I think the guy may finally be gone. but there's still others in the party that are just like them. So thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, Paul, those are excellent points. I'm going to hit each one of them briefly because they're very important. You're right. There are seven members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Remember, there are nine members of the U.S. Supreme Court. That sits in Washington, D.C. There are seven members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That sits in Madison, Wisconsin. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court is supposed to deal with state issues. And the U.S. Supreme Court is supposed to deal with federal issues. But the U.S. Supreme Court is the big kahuna. They're the 800-pound gorilla. And they can do whatever they want when it comes to even overturning what a state Supreme Court does if there's what's called a federal question, which they can say that whenever they want. Now, it is true that when Trump complained about the election in Wisconsin, three of the Wisconsin Supreme Court justices, because they call them each justices, voted to overturn the election. Three of them, three Republicans. But four of them didn't, and that's what saved us. Three of them were Democrats, but one of them was a guy, Brian Hagedorn, who's a Republican. But he seems to be a straight shooter, especially on constitutional issues and things like having to do with democracy and elections. And that's what saved us. Otherwise, you would have had a state Supreme Court overturn the election. And then the Republicans on the U.S. Supreme Court may be saying, well, I'll leave that up to the states, and you'd have a constitutional crisis. That's how close we came. Wisco Paul talked about Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson is up to his eyeballs in this thing. Don't forget, it was a week or so ago that it came out that Ron Johnson, his aide, wanted to send Mike Pence, the fake electors from Wisconsin and Michigan. What is Ron Johnson doing with the fake electors from Michigan? Ron Johnson does not represent Michigan, and they were fake electors. They were fake electors from Wisconsin, and Ron Johnson was part of that. What's happening right now is that Merrick Garland is investigating the fake electors, and he should investigate their mules. Ron Johnson was a fake elector mule. They hand him Wisconsin and Michigan, and they go, get those to Pence. He's in it. He's in it to his eyeballs. You ask about Voss. Voss was afraid that Trump would come after him. What he doesn't understand is, if Hitler comes after you, there's no mercy. I mean, there's no accommodating him. He just decides whether you should be deep sixed. So what Voss did to accommodate Trump was to hire Gableman at state expense for $44,000. My eye, $44,000. My eye, $44,000. Then it went to $676,000. Then it went to over $1 million with no end in sight to defend Gableman from his conduct. That's where it went. Voss did it so he didn't want to be called a rhino by Trump. But he's being called a rhino by Trump and by also by others in the Republican Party now. Didn't do him any good. He's going to be deep fixed. Reminds me of Ernst Stavro Blofeld and the James Bond. He'll have three people standing near the piranha pool and he presses a button and one falls in and gets eaten. The one you wouldn't expect. This is, we're talking about organized crime here. And then Lindsey Graham called up and he told the Raffensperger people they had to come up with the votes. And now he's been subpoenaed to a grand jury, criminal grand jury, in Atlanta. And he's trying to absolutely beat the subpoena. This is wrong. We're going to a break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.